When I say the word politics, what immediately comes to mind for you?
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is, like, saying things without actually saying things.
Rich white people.
I really don't want to have a conversation about it. Politics is politics.
Honestly, just lots of people arguing about some very interesting topics.
The first thing that comes to my mind is Judith Collins.
And how would you describe politics to a mate?
Conflicts.
Farming.
Colours as well.
Indecisiveness.
It's like a game. People never want to say what, you know, their real intentions are, I guess. It's something that I want to get more into, but it's just like I don't really know where to start.
Start here with the Not at the Dinner Table podcast.
To discuss all things political that you're not allowed to at dinner.
Especially if your granddad's coming over. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jen, but is it about 10 to 11 at night right about now?
I'm not actually.
For us right here, it's 10 to 11 at night, isn't it? Because
yeah.
We have incredible time management skills. But today we're talking about kaupapa Māori and the experiences of Māori politicians and government.
Yeah, so kaupapa Māori is the Māori approach, principles, ideology or agenda. We stole that quick little definition from the Māori dictionary. Shout out to
genuinely such a handy resource.
I did a little bit of research for the stats for this, and as of the 2018 census, next year's the next census, but there are 775,000 Māori in New Zealand, and the Māori median age is 25.4.
There are also 26 Māori politicians in Parliament, making up 20% of Parliament.
I guess the reason we wanted to take a focus on Māori issues and what it's like to be a Māori representative in Parliament is because te reo is one of our three languages and it's the Indigenous culture of New Zealand, so I think it's something pretty important to look at.
Earlier this year, there was a fairly high-profile story around what could be seen on the surface as a somewhat insignificant rule in Parliament around men having to wear ties. That became a news story when the co-leader of the Māori Party, Rāwiri Waititi, protested that rule. And so both of our guests today, sadly we don't have Rāwiri on, but we have his co-leader of the Māori Party, Debbie Ngarewepeka, and ex-What Now host and now Labour MP, Tāmati Coffey, on. They both have two different views on the rule around ties. But then, you know, they're also just fantastic people to speak to just to get their perspective on things.
Yeah, and the first person we talked to was Tāmati Coffey. So what did he have to say?
Well, before we get into what he had to say, I thought I'd put a small explainer at the start, just a couple of words and names that are handy to know. Tāmati at one point mentions rangatiratanga, which, for a bit of a definition, is chiefly authority and autonomy, as well as self-determination and self-management. And then Tāmati also mentions three people, Parakuru Horomia, Apirana Nata, and Matiu Rata. And they were all at different points in their careers the Minister for Māori Development, which, for some context, the current Minister for Māori Development is Willie Jackson. There we go.
Beautiful te reo speak there.
Well, you know, got to give it a go.
Got to give it a go. Yeah. Shall we get into Tāmati?
Yes. First thing I had to chat to him about was just generally what his experience has been, you know, as a Māori politician. I was wondering how you would describe your experience of being a Māori man in Parliament.
Being a Māori member of Parliament is an honour and a privilege, and actually we stand on the shoulders of giants that have gone before us and made some huge changes, or the changing face of rangatiratanga, really, in Aotearoa. You know, from the very start of the rebirth of the country when the treaty was signed, the history between Crown and Māori has been patchy and checkered and one of colonisation, and it's been a struggle over the years for the Māori to have representation. And so it is absolutely an honour and a privilege to be somebody that has been elected to Parliament to serve our people and to continue that struggle, noting that there are many good people that have had this role before me, and there will be many others to come as well. Yes, it's a journey. It's a constant journey, but actually I'm pretty happy that at the moment I've got a strong bunch of people with me. Some people like the Honourable Nanaia Mahuta, who's our Minister of Local Government and Minister of Foreign Affairs, who's been around the traps for a very long time, coming up to about 30 years, I think, and continues to enjoy huge amount of support from the people that vote for her. There's other people like Parakuru Horomia, who was known for being a table thumper, and that kind of sums it up. You know, you get a bit of an imagery about table thumping. and how successful that can sometimes be when you're trying to achieve change. So actually, he's an inspiration. Api Damiata, who back in the day, fought for our Māori people to enjoy a level of rangatiratanga that should have always been there. Ngāti Rata was an ex-Labour MP back in the day, and he set up the Waitangi Tribunal, against the backdrop of a pretty tumultuous time in terms of race relations in New Zealand.
I just wondered if you had any bills that are going through Parliament right now that affect Māori in particular.
So I chair the Māori Affairs Select Committee, and in that select committee we talk about treaty settlements. Every settlement is different, and that's because every iwi has had its own experience with the government. It's a really big thing for an iwi to get to a point where they are able to have a first reading of their bill in the House. The government have kind of set the rules of engagement, which is that you have to negotiate ideally as part of a large natural grouping. So it stops individual hapu from wanting to put their hand up and argue their grievances. It kind of encourages them to work through their iwi organisations. That can cause friction and tension sometimes too. And so iwi will usually get together a bunch of claimants, all kind of marry up the stories. Sometimes they hire historians to help validate some of the stories and their claims. And that can be quite a lengthy process. There's often marae hui. There's often phone calls to officials from Te Arawhiti or the Office of Treaty Settlements. Often there's lawyers involved as well, because that's the language that politicians speak. And often, of all of the financial redress that can be in settlements, actually it's the apology that can be the thing that punches people in the heart. Because actually having the Crown acknowledge the role that it's played over the years in marginalising Māori and marginalising the language and stealing the land, all of that stuff comes to a head when you get a Crown Minister standing there in the House of Parliament saying, we're sorry. I think in terms of trying to enable the tribe to move on, actually it's critical.
Things that have come up more recently, the creation of a public holiday to celebrate Matariki. And I'm just wondering if you could speak a bit more to the significance of that.
First of all, I was on record standing up in the House at the first reading of the Matariki Bill saying, we've got some dubious public holidays in New Zealand. So I pointed to the fact that we've got a public holiday after New Year's Day, which is called the day after New Year's Day. We celebrate Christmas, which again is interesting because we've got lots of different cultures in New Zealand at the moment, and kind of picking one and running with one Christian holiday kind of excludes a big part of our multicultural community out there. But however, we've got Christmas Day, and then we've got a day called Boxing Day, which is like, well, what is that all about? The significance of our Matariki public holiday, which is going to be rolled out next year for the first time, is huge, and that it's actually, this is a day which does have meaning, and it's a knowledge system that's been lost over the years. This is Māori astronomy, for want of a better term, or Mātauranga Māori as we've started coining it, but actually it's an ancient form of knowledge. We talk about how Māori came here from Hawaiki. We were guided by the stars. This is how we made our way across the ocean. I'm excited because it's a public holiday with a bit of meaning, but actually something that we can grow and nurture as our own. No other country around the world has got a Matariki public holiday. That's going to be ours.
I want to bring it back to something that happened in February of this year, where you disagreed with Rawiri Waititi of Te Pāti Māori over the issue about him not wearing a tie during question time in Parliament. I'm just wondering if your feelings have changed over, your disagreement with him, especially now that ties are no longer mandatory.
Let me be really clear. I hate wearing a tie. I went to a high school where we didn't have to wear ties. In fact, we didn't even wear a uniform.
You didn't have to wear ties at high school? Oh, my goodness.
We didn't even have to wear a uniform. And it was a great high school, and it was incredibly liberal, and they encouraged everybody to wear what they want to and express their individuality. So coming into a parliamentary setting where you were kind of forced to wear ties, I get it. I wore the tie. But in this role, and this is one of the main reasons that I disagreed with Rawiri at the time, we are we're embarking on huge changes, and it just seemed really minute in terms of the things that that I thought that the Māori Party were riding into town on, saying we're going to fix things, fundamentally we're going to transform the way that Parliament interacts with Te Ao Māori, and then it was a tie. But like I said before, don't get me wrong. I hate ties. I don't like them. I've never liked them. And since actually the Speaker made the ruling to be able to free everybody from wearing ties. I haven't worn a tie since.
So, Jean, you also spoke to Debbie Ngarewepeke, who's the co-leader of the Māori Party. And I guess we'll hear her different take on the issue of wearing a tie in Parliament. But you wanted to talk to her about some other things first.
I wanted to talk to her about the COVID-19 public health response, because she thought that was a bill that affects Māori quite significantly, and what the Māori Party learned in their time away from government. They spent about 3 years chilling, redesigning who they were, but I think it's better just to hear it from her herself.
Tuatahi ngā mihi kia koutou katoa, ko Debbie Ngarewepeke ahau, he uri o Ngāti Rūni, ngā rauru, ngā ruahine. Kia ora koutou katoa. So my name is Debbie Ngarewepeke. I was born in Taranaki, actually in Pātia. I come from Ngāti Rūni and ngā rauru and ngā ruahine iwi. And I'm the co-leader of Te Pāti Māori.
Just to start us off, what are the current bills going through Parliament that affect Māori?
Oh, gosh. Top of mind, we have the COVID-19 Public Health Response Act, which is going through. We've got the Water Services Bill. We've got the Conversion Practices Bill, actually. And I've got a Members Bill that we've put in and hoping to get drawn out of the bucket, which is the banned seabed mining.
Do you want to talk to me a little bit about kind of your issues with the COVID-19 Public Health Response Act as it is currently?
Yeah, sure. I think one of the biggest things is that, you know, there's a lot of legislation, a lot going through the House at the moment under urgency, and this is probably one of those, and it's required a certain degree of scrutiny that I think is important to look into the detail. So some of the detail in this is that it has the warrantless searches of marae, and we take real exception to that. One, because it is the last bastion of what's left of us, if I be really honest. It is our place of tapu and sacred, and marae has been singled out, not other religious places of collection, other cultural places of collection. So, we take real exception. The aspects of it that we want to get change is that they take that out of the whole act, to be honest. We don't so much have an issue with decisions that have to be made for the safety, but we don't think that Māori should be singled out.
One of the things that you've been talking about a lot recently is with the new alert level traffic light and about Māori vaccination rates. Do you want to talk to me a little bit about that one?
Probably at the start of this conversation, I need to say that we have always been very supportive of Labor government's health response. From the word go, we were extremely supportive of the conservative way that and decisions were made, most importantly, about the well-being of our communities. What I guess our biggest issue is that the public health response for Māori vaccination was a complete miss because of the fact that they start off at 65 years plus, and that was 12% of our population. By the time it rolled down, it was getting to the bulk of our population, and it was just way after the fact. The second thing is that we have a large proportion of our population as Māori that don't engage in health services constructively, and that's because there has been years of systemic failures in profiling and racism. Whether you intend to or not, when you enact policy that leaves the population out and can have huge, create huge mortalities. That is a form of genocide, and I have been quoted and still stand by that.
One of the things that I noticed in your comment sections, a lot of people, even around this kind of topic of Māori vaccinations, is that, you know, you're getting all this money and funding to boost Māori vaccinations. What's your response to that?
Well, so I belong to an iwi, one of the second to largest iwi in Taranaki, and we, I think, for the whole thing have seen $300,000. To be really honest, I get how general population see that. I have no doubt that the government has released funds, but when you go to track it and see where it's landing in the very organisations and entities that have been responsible for the poor performance to these communities anyway. And what it should be is that if you can get these numbers and we can see the results, we will just throw money at you to go and keep doing more of that. Now, and I think that's what has to happen, is that you come up with a really clever initiative, back it like crazy and get on with it.
the Māori Party weren't in government for the 2017 to 2020 government. Yes. What did the party learn in this time?
Yeah, I think there's a few things. We had a growing youth population come through, and we've also become extremely more diverse since 2004. Those issues still stand, but there's so many other issues. You know, we're contending with more challenges. We've got huge homelessness. There are more Māori contending with health issues and unemployment. Our mortality rate is 10 years shy of what non-Māori are. And some of these stats have gotten worse. And I also, I think we needed to be able to take time to really connect and understand the absolute, you know, massive mahi done from our first generational party, take those lessons, and then bring them forward for the second generation.
One of the things we talked to Tamati about was the Thai rule and kind of some of the things that you've stood up against in Parliament. What's that been like for you?
So it's really quite intimidating, I'll be straight up. But you've got to always come from your values. And I was really surprised where Tamati landed on that, because I think he got that really, really wrong. The issue is about shaking that place up and making it reflect who it represents. We have to lead by example, and we have to push back against these traditionalists. You know, we've got to dismantle walls of racism and walls of oppression that stop us living how we should be living.
It was a little while ago now, but in about mid-September it was Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori, so Māori Language Week. And Jen, you were speaking to a Te Reo Māori teacher, some Polytech students, and you heard from the Teachers Council as well about learning Te Reo at different stages throughout your schooling.
Yeah, it was really interesting to hear from people about their different perspectives of whether we should be learning Te Reo Māori at different levels or whether we should just not be learning it at all. One of the big talking points at the last election was whether we should make Te Reo Māori compulsory to learn until year 10. Greens and Te Pāti Māori were for it, whereas others had no firm stance. But what do our young people think?
Yes, because I think it's important to honour our culture and the history that New Zealand has been through.
To be bilingual, it gives you a big advantage in learning other languages.
It's really good for children's neuroplasticity, and I think it just makes everyone, like, whole.
Yes, I think because it's important for all people to be exposed to that type of thing, and I think later on they can choose whether they'll learn about it or not, and that can be their own pursuing, like, journey. But I mean, if we're forced to learn French in high school, then why aren't we supposed to learn, like, Māori, which is a part of New Zealand culture?
No, because not everyone would want to learn it.
A local teacher who wishes only to be known as Fire believes we must all learn Te Reo.
Yeah, you know, we've got a responsibility. It doesn't matter if you are Māori or if you're Pākehā, if you're English, if you're South African. It doesn't matter if you're working in a school, if you're management, if you're on the board of trustees. It's your responsibility. If you live in Aotearoa as a treaty partner, there's people who aren't Māori have benefited from the treaty in ways that lots of people don't actually realise, aren't aware of. So it's time for everybody to step up and do our bit to turn around what's happened in the past that's had such a negative impact on everybody in Aotearoa. So we have an obligation and a responsibility as Pākehā citizens. So it doesn't matter who you are. Yes, we need to be teaching Māori in schools.
And although the New Zealand Teaching Council doesn't have a stance on this particular matter, they do have some regulations around Te Reo Māori learning.
Teachers have a requirement in the standards to practice and develop the use of Te Reo and Tikanga Māori. This falls within the standard Te Tiriti o Waitangi Partnership. These standards reflect that our teachers are committed to honouring Te Tiriti o Waitangi and understand it has implications in their practice.
And even though resources for the Māori curriculum have been around since the early 2000s, some teachers aren't even aware of them. Fire understands that some things are keeping teachers back from learning.
But what we don't have is we still don't have enough people that feel confident and even people that want to, teachers that want to be able to improve their deal, with the way teaching is at the moment as a profession, going off and finding the time to learn te reo, to be confident enough to put it out there with your kids in your classroom, that's hard. That's hard. And I so feel for those kaiako in that position.
And in terms of future thinking, do people studying now want to learn te reo?
Yeah, I mean, I would. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I think it would be amazing, especially like applying it if most New Zealanders knew it. Like, I mean, it's a great skill to have.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, I definitely would.
Sure, I'll try to learn a little bit more and try to remember it.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
Resources are no longer the problem for learning te reo. At this point in time, it's just complacency.
It's not an excuse to say, oh, there's nowhere I can learn, there's free places to learn. Get off your butt. You know, it's go and do it and you'll love it.
So speaking of students,
next week is the housing episode. We have a focus on student accommodation, renters' rights, all the things you need to know about when you're young. But who are our guests next week?
Nicola Willis of the National Party, and then Tamitha Paul, who is a councillor on Wellington City Council, but has a particular interest and does a lot of work around the area of housing and accommodation.
I saw an article the other day that someone was told to live off of noodles.
Who told them that?
The Ministry of Social Development.
Cheers to that, guys. Really, really, really helpful advice.
A product of the New Zealand Broadcasting School at Ara Institute of Canterbury.